You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 27 May. Both UK and US markets are closed today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Fima Adia from Momentum Security. The Quantum Food Group results, I don't know, is that stock actually more just about corporate action? Because certainly HEP surged, but stock's expensive. And ISA, a proper microcap, but some decent numbers coming out. Alan Dixon from Worrynet, good results coming through, although problems with Nashua at the port. Chris Foster from Stadia, how they reward staff and students. And I also want to ask around sort of distance learning as a solution or part of the solution to youth unemployment. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. Sasol stuck in a downward channel. Charts predict no recovery in share price yet, but value investors probably sitting ready to pile in, and in many cases already piled in. Business Day, Telkom shareholders approve the SwiftNet sale. When they were going to list it in early 2022, the business was valued at about $13 billion. They sold it for $7 billion. Morning markets, US was green on Friday, S&P up 0.7%, NASDAQ up a full percent. East is mostly green, we've got Sydney and Tokyo up 0.3%, Hong Kong down 0.3%, and Tencent down 2.1%. Commodities green, gold $2,370 an ounce, Brent $82.30, platinum $1,050, palladium $992, rand is $18.41, bitcoin $69,000 on the exact, and top 40 opening call a red open 120 points down or 0.15%.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Fahima Adia from Momentum Securities. Fahima, appreciate the early morning. Quantum Food Group, the results, and we've seen this from other chicken producers most recently, Astral, HEPS surging 650% at 21.7 cents, but it still puts it on a price earnings of about two times what Astral is. And I can't help wondering if this isn't more a corporate action story, or is there perhaps an investment case here as well? The results were good, but it really was a sort of a bounce back maybe more than anything else.
Morning, Simon. Yes, so there's been a big jump in the share price in this one. I see it's up almost 142% since the 6th of March. But yeah, after that results presentation, it came off quite a bit. It's down almost 40%. And like you said, I think what's been really driving that hype was the corporate activity and the possibility of a takeover battle. After Country Bird Holdings increased its stake by buying out Astral stake at about a 70% premium. So I don't know if you recall, but in 2020, Country Bird tried to buy out the company but didn't quite get it right. Mm. So I think the market was hoping that could be the case now again. But, you know, they did say that they have no intention of making a takeover bid for Quantum Foods. And if we look at it from a fundamental point of view, you know, despite the improvement in the interim results, you know, I am struggling to see the merits to justify the massive jump in the share price. So, yeah, if we look at the interim results, there has been an improvement. HEPS increased by about 650%. That was driven by reduced load shedding and higher egg prices. But, I mean, it is off a very low base since last year. And there's quite a few risks, I think, ahead, given that there are still avian flu outbreaks. If we look at the value of birds that were affected by the outbreaks recently, that amounted to about 37 million rand. And revenue declined by 13%. There's still lower volumes there. And yeah, so I think just heading into the rest of 2024, the risks for avian flu still remain quite high. The government has very stringent protocols for vaccination against it, and no producers have actually been successful in applying for that vaccination. So I think that will be a major headwind to earnings until they're able to get that vaccine through.
Yeah, I actually asked a Chris Kitter around that, and he said, yep, there's a vaccine, but they can't do it at this point. ISA, which is a proper microcap, I think it's like a 200, maybe a 250 million market cap, but in a good set of numbers, good growth in revenue, good sort of subscription or recurring subscription. But perhaps the bigger point is that microcap. A nice little business, though.
Yeah, quite a tiny one. I was looking at it, market cap's around 270 million now, 270 million rand. And year to date, the share price is up quite nicely by 40%. If we look at the results for FY24, revenue increased 33%, and 88% is actually subscription derived. So they make use of ISA's internally developed security monitoring platform. And what they've been saying is that customers are actually showing a preference for subscribing for security solutions as opposed to getting their own in-house hardware and software. HEPS increased by about 35%. And look at the dividend. That's also quite healthy. So they've been quite cash generative, and they're now on a dividend yield of about 10.8%.
Yeah, I take your point. I mean, a really good little business, and the share chart is quite something. We'll leave it there. Femi Adia from Momentum Securities. Femi, always appreciate the early morning.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting with Alan Dixon, Group CEO Roynet. 6 months results ending March, revenue up 7%, HEPS up 8%, dividend up 8%. Alan, I want to start, which was probably the only sort of bleak spot on the set of results, and that was logistic challenges, mostly port, and that hurt revenue from the Nashua brand. You simply couldn't get the stock that you needed. Has that resolved itself?
It has largely resolved itself now that we've moved into the second half of the year, Simon. The stock levels are more or less back to where they should be, and we're expecting a normal second 6 months for Nashua and have the normal amount of sales that we would typically expect from them. But in that first 6 months, unlike most of our other businesses where we were able to make some remedial actions, the shipments that Nashua takes on board are largely consolidated and quite large each time they come in. And hence, when there was a disruption, it was almost like a binary event that we just couldn't get right. So it was a fairly significant impact on them. And we weren't able to resolve that, unlike the rest of the businesses.
The rest of the business is doing well. And let's touch on renewable. You mentioned some saturation in the battery storage market, particularly in the consumer and smaller corporate. But otherwise, a space that's doing very well and seeing a good demand coming through.
Yes, Simon. Our primary target market is the commercial and industrial market. So that's the market that we define normally as 1 megawatt up to about 30 or 40 megawatts. And that's where we are primarily exposed and where we primarily focus and have done for the last 5 or 6 years. And in that market, there hasn't been any of that saturation that we saw down at the bottom end in the residential and small commercial, which is really, it was driven by lack of load shedding, which is good for the country, but not so good for that particular business area. But that C&I space is very much, call it a large company space. Now, those companies are far more concerned about what is Eskom's tariffs going to be 3 years from where we are now. What does the municipal infrastructure that I'm sitting on look like, and how likely is that to fall over? We're increasingly seeing failures on the municipal grid, irrespective of the generation. So we're strategically seeing a trend whereby the C&I and business community is making a decision to have an alternative grid power to some extent. And therefore, we're seeing lots of activity there. We have a large pipeline. Our build rates have increased very nicely in that space. And I think this is a medium to long-term trend whereby we're going to replace current grid capacity by alternate sources of renewable energy.
I take the point. I mean, 60-odd days of no load shedding, and don't get me wrong, we absolutely all love that. But the bigger picture is the load shedding perhaps was a bit of the trigger a couple of years ago, but this is just more about sort of good business decision, being renewable, being green, reliable, and truthfully, cheaper than what we get from Eskom. And that is that driver you talk about, which is a medium to long-term driver.
Absolutely, Simon. And then if you add on to that, many of the South African space or SA Inc. has export customers. And increasingly, we're seeing green requirements or less carbon intensive requirements. And hence, many of our partners are having to have some form of green energy, whether it be wheeled or generated for themselves, in which they can ensure that they remove themselves from the risk that South African Eskom power is going to present when some of these tariffs start to come in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, of course, the good old ESG. Defence, another strong sector there, increased demand. And I'm imagining in many of the cases, as you get that increased demand, you increase capacity in your facilities, and that should over time ultimately help margins.
It definitely will. The largest demand we have at the moment is in our fuse business. Mm-hmm. And we did deploy capital last year, which was completed sort of about 5 or 6 months ago to increase their capacity quite significantly. And that's already starting to play through. But other than them, we have quite a bit of capacity still left in those factories. So we're able to pick up still much more volume than we have at the moment without having to deploy hundreds of millions of capex in order to get there. And obviously, exactly what you say, as those volumes go through those factories, recoveries increase, we get much better throughput coming out of those, and hence margins do increase. And we saw the first of that already this year, in which our defense margins have already started to improve very nicely on the increased volumes that we have.
And that sector also has a strong order book into the future.
It does. We have nearly 3 billion, 2.7 billion rands worth of order books, of which 80% of that is export. So very little reliance on the South African customer base. So that's great. Secondly, in that 80%, it's actually very diverse geography. So we have many geographies that we're selling into, which is also very positive. But that 2.7 billion at the moment where we stand right now, that's more or less a year's worth of coverage. So we are fully covered for the rest of this financial year and a big chunk of next financial year already. And we're certainly seeing no decrease in the demand. So we expect that this, in fact, with the geopolitical uncertainty that we see out there, we anticipate that this is a medium to longer term trajectory that we're going to see ourselves on in this defense business.
How much of the group, obviously there's stuff you're importing, the Ashura brand being one of them and other bits, but how much of your revenue is export? You mentioned in the defense, yeah, of course there's a circuit breakers, a lot of that goes into the US.
Yes, so our export is primarily driven around that defense business that you speak about and our electrical engineering segment, both cables and circuit breakers. So last year, we exported a little bit over 4 billion rand, so around about 35% of our revenue. Mm-hmm. And again, in this first half, we did 2.2 billion rand. So it was up 16% on last year. And we are well positioned. We've already spoken about the defense order book, but the environment in Zambia is positive. The Americans, our export order book of circuit breakers into America and Europe specifically, is much improved over where it was about a year ago. So we have quite good line of sight of our export, and we expect this to continue. And it's a particular strategic drive that we've got. So we are investing into, we've got five large geographic presences around the world, and we're continuing to invest into those so that we've got better boots on the ground and better capability to ensure that we can continue to grow the export drive. Because we think, despite a hope of improved conditions in South Africa, we do expect that the macros are going to remain under some pressure for some years yet.
I take your point on that. Last question, strong cash flow. And this even in spite of increased working capital requirements. I mean, you are generating good cash at a group level.
Yes, we are. I mean, it's always been, I would argue, a core competency of Reunert. Yeah. It's a very strong part of our investment case. And we've continued that. So, yes, we have put a little bit more into working capital just as a part of the Transnet to support ourselves through that. And we also had quite large sales in the second quarter, which haven't fully been collected. So we've got a little bit in trade debtors as well. Mm. But overall, generating very strong cash flow, and that together with the balance sheet that we have enables us to fully support all of our strategic initiatives and our OPEX requirements, as well as paying good dividends.
We'll leave it there. Alan Dixon, Group CEO, Reunert. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today. Really, the stock is in all the right places. It's in energy, if it's in defense at this point. Do you hold it? Is it a stock that you are, perhaps you've been watching, perhaps you've been holding? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Chris Forster, CEO of Stadio. Chris, appreciate to chat to you. We're not talking results and the like today. I want to touch on youth unemployment, but before we do, I suppose I want to call it the sort of shared values from Stadio towards your staff, to your students, to your shareholders. Shareholders, of course, it's about share price, it's about dividends, but you take your staff and students quite seriously as well. In fact, they can right now earn Stadio equity.
Yes, thank you, Simon, for the opportunity. Here at Stadio, when we started after the migration of a few brands into the Stadio Higher Education brand to create this new comprehensive institution, we always said that, you know, we want to be a new vision in higher education, and we really want to put something down in South Africa that would make a significant contribution to the wider South African society. And we said that this vehicle, the Stadio vehicle, is the ideal vehicle then also to create a higher education institution that will share its growth with not just your typical shareholder, but also to share the growth of the institution with your customers, our students, as well as with our staff. That was the thinking behind it.
I like this. I get some of the big corporates do it for executive suite. Is this sort of across the staff and across the students?
Yes. So how the Kulisa student share scheme works, it is limited to our postgraduate students. So those students who obtain qualifications on the NQF level 8, in layman's terms, that would now be your typical honors, master's, postgraduate qualifications, LLB, master's and doctorate qualifications. They would receive shares that we obtain in the free market. And then we have the staff share scheme, where we have more of a phantom share scheme, where we've ring-fenced a number of shares. And then staff will share equally in the dividend payouts that would be made in that fund.
Okay, I like this. I think this is a great initiative. It also, there might be post-grad, but many of these students are going to be younger, and of course it gets them interested in the market. It also brings me to the recent data around youth unemployment, which is, it's a terrifying number. And of course, that's not squarely in your remit, but as a tertiary and as a distance learning education system, youth unemployment must be something that is, you're constantly scratching your head around. In one example, just in terms of the courses that you offer that have, I imagine, fundamentally changed over the decades you've been in the industry?
Yes, no, most certainly. So at Stadio, we're in a very fortunate position with our biggest student population being serviced in the distance learning mode. Every time we do a survey, more than 95% of our graduates are actually employed. What we must remember in the distance learning offering, you work with adult learners.
Yeah.
So a lot of those learners actually join the institution when they are already employed. However, we also have our contact learning business, where we have six campuses currently offering contact learning across the country. And there, the stats are also very exciting for us, looking at our graduate employability surveys that we run. It's very important for us. How we deal with this, Simon, is we say everything that we do at Stadio is underpinned by what we call our WWS. Now, I just want to quickly talk to this because we're addressing exactly how we make our graduates more employable. Is the WWS standing for widening access, giving more people the opportunity who perhaps in the past couldn't get access to higher education due to various reasons, giving those people access to higher education. And then very important for us is to align with the world of work. Now, a lot of institutions say that, but we really try to live it. So we get industry involved right from the development of our programs, during the delivery of our programs, and at the end, evaluating our programs. So really making sure that our programs are relevant and that our graduates are sought after in the world of work. And then lastly, to support our graduates to be successful with their studies.
And I suppose one of the key things with this, and I take your approach where you, as you say, you're involving industry, it's also dynamic. And I'm thinking, for example, artificial intelligence, which you probably had to some degree, it's exploded in the last 18 months. And that's outside of just computer science. I mean, it's exploding across industries and tweaking slash adjusting those courses to make you ready for the new reality, which is out there.
Yes, no, absolutely. I think at the start, it was a monster that we didn't actually, as an industry, the higher education industry, understand how we're going to deal with it. But I think it's very clear now, higher education is embracing AI, especially I'm now just talking in the assessment space of the business. Where we really embrace it. And there are various ways of how you can use AI, you know, in your whole assessment strategy.
Yeah,
I hadn't even actually thought of that part. I quickly want to go back to the distance learning, and you make the point, and it makes sense, where most of the students there are already employed. So this is more a case of upskilling and adapting again to that changing workplace. One of the key points around being distance learning is I don't need to get to a big city and be in that city. I can do this, well, if I was going to say from any corner of the country, perhaps even beyond our borders, and that is a huge opening of a door for many people.
Oh, yes, most definitely. You know, and what we also try and do is to create that flexibility for a learner. We see a lot of students starting off in the contact learning mode, and then life happens. You know, some of them get employment. Some of them just can't afford the traveling or the accommodation to be close to a campus. And then they seamlessly just transfer over to the distance learning, and where they can then study from anywhere, as you've just said, and basically on their own time.
Yeah, and I think you make a great point there. I think some of the costs we forget around education is that transport, is that accommodation, and hence the distance learning. Chris Fuster, CEO of Stadio, really appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Skalklo, PSG Old Oak, on Friday about Investec results. Stock was just off all-time highs. As he pointed out, they do have a problem with the FSCA. That might cost £30 million. We asked if this is a stock you were particularly interested in. Half of you said yes, but selectively looking at banks. A third said, yep, banks are cheap. The rest was saying worried about impairment risks. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nubuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, talking Theresa.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.